There will be rain throughout the day with highs near 55. This evening, sunset is at 7:47 p.m. Tonight, there will be areas of rain. Lows will be at 49 degrees. The moon is in its waxing gibbous phase. There will be rain tomorrow and Tuesday. Highs the next few days will be in the mid-50s. It's expected to dry up by Wednesday and Thursday, when we'll have highs in the mid-60s. This is KORC.
This is KORC 105.9 LPFM, Corvallis, Oregon. Streaming at korcfm.com.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
Hello, KORC listeners. Welcome to April. This is Wendy Byrne offering you fodder from the Corvallis Civics Cafe. What does the word civics mean to you? According to Wikipedia, civics, part of political science, is the study of the civil and political rights and obligations of citizens in a society. According to the League of Women Voters, civics is defined as the study or science of the privileges and obligations of citizens. Other sources note that the word civic denotes the virtues, assets, and activities that a free people need to govern themselves well. I'd like to stress that last part. The word civic denotes the virtues, assets, and activities that a free people need to govern themselves well. In the interest of remaining a free people that govern ourselves well, I'm hoping that we all continue to focus our attention on local civics during this stressful time our country is experiencing, because we need to be actively engaged in our governance. Some people in this country would like us to be passive. I implore you, be active, and let me help you expand your civic awareness by serving you the following information from Corvallis. Last week, on March 31st, the City Council held a work session with two main goals: participation in an exercise regarding their priorities for this term in office, and discussion of changes to their code of conduct. Councillor Ellis, who is the current Vice President of the Council, led them through an exercise that identified and ranked priorities. The result of the exercise was that despite individual opinions, the body of 9 Council members clearly ranked the civic campus discussion as highest in importance for their focus during this term. The other top areas of focus are community resiliency, having a discussion of the rolling moratorium, transit policies, and bathrooms in our city parks. While not surprised that the civic campus rose to the top, I was pleased to see the interest in transit policies as well as the interest in bathrooms in our city parks. The mayor's task for the council involved reviewing wording taken from outside sources for possible addition to the code of conduct for the Corvallis City Council. Each term, each city council is responsible for adopting and adhering to a code of conduct. While they can continue using that of the previous city council, one could argue that the code of conduct is due for an update. The mayor's plan is to use the information gained from them during the work session to bring forward an updated code of conduct for the council to review, edit, and adopt at a meeting in the near future. As work sessions go, this was a good one for listening as well as watching, because watching allows for understanding in a way that listening does not. It was interesting to watch how the individual members of the City Council participated with the two different agenda items. Some of them were highly resistant to participation, seemingly irritated or even petulant at being asked to engage in the group exercises. Some expressed doubt that the outcome would be worth the effort, while others worked with the process readily. If you are interested in seeing and hearing it for yourself, you can find the recording of this and many other city meetings via the City Archives at CorvallisOregon.gov or by going to Vimeo.com/City of Corvallis. There was a moment of irony when, at the beginning of the meeting where they were set to discuss their code of conduct, the mayor noted that one of the city councilors had violated the serial meetings rule. The state of Oregon's public meetings laws prohibits serial meetings. A serial meeting refers to a series of communications, either direct or indirect, such as via email, where a majority of the council collectively discusses, deliberates, or takes action on an item within their jurisdiction without a formal meeting taking place. More simply put, All decisions and discussions that involve our city council are supposed to happen in a public setting, such as a work session or a business meeting, not behind closed doors or in private via email. While this particular incident is likely minor, all city councilors and all residents who serve on boards or commissions are trained in not creating serial meetings. I have my eye on this and will bring you more information in the future as able. In other recent city meetings, on April 2nd at their meeting, the Planning Commission made a recommendation on which city area the city council should adopt as its climate-friendly area. Page 4 of the Saturday, April 5th issue of the Gazette Times has an article explaining more details about the meeting and about climate-friendly areas. In September of 2020, then-Governor Kate Brown signed an executive order focusing on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. As a result, all larger cities in Oregon, Corvallis included, have been asked to identify areas in their cities to be labeled climate-friendly areas, and land use codes are then modified to allow development that encourages a more varied mix of commercial development and housing, where residents can access services without being dependent on driving for their transportation. Think transit, walking, and biking. The Corvallis Planning Commission has recommended an area that includes 9th Street for Corvallis's first climate-friendly area. And if you want to know more, you can dive into the Gazette Times for that article by Ella Hutcherson on page 4 from Saturday, April 5th. On Thursday, April 3rd, the Safe Streets and Roads for All open house was very well attended. Over 100 people attended the event at the large meeting room in the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library to view the poster boards and talk to city staff about their project that aims to improve transportation safety in Corvallis and Benton County. As part of their study, they are collecting input from individuals about locations where they feel unsafe driving, walking, or biking on our local streets and roads. If you were unable to attend but wish to see the materials and share your input, you can do so online through the safety comment map on the city website. Go to CorvallisOregon.gov and type safety comment map into the search bar. The map will be open for comments until April 27th. Looking ahead to meetings next week, wow, it's going to be a busy week for local civics. On Monday, April 7th, the City Council business meeting will start at 6 p.m. On Tuesday, April 8th, the Downtown Parking Task Force meeting will start at 10 a.m. And later that day, the Historic Resources Commission will meet at 6:30 p.m. On Wednesday, April 9th, coffee with your economic development office starts at 10 a.m. And later, building solutions addressing housing needs in our community starts at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, the 10th, the City Council executive session will start at 3:30 p.m., followed by the work session at 4 p.m. A look at their agenda for the work session shows some interesting items up for discussion, including the creation of a task force to take on charter review, a task force to take on downtown vitality, and a discussion about the Imagine Corvallis Action Network. Interested in any or all of those items? See more information on the city's website at CorvallisOregon.gov. So much to pay attention to, almost too much. Last week, partly as a reaction to hearing local business people accuse the city of hiding information, I spoke about ways to be informed about local civics and mentioned signing up for the various electronic notifications offered by the city of Corvallis. Want to know what is included in one of those newsletters? On April 1st, the city released the latest edition of Neighborhood News. I'm not going to read you the entire newsletter, but I do want to share the basic information that it includes. It starts off with a section titled Upcoming City Calendar of Events and lists meetings and activities, giving helpful links to more detailed information and the city calendar. Then there is a section titled City News, and this edition highlights information about the city budget, information about the Safe Streets and Roads for All open house, the upcoming Building Solutions discussion of housing needs in Corvallis, some details about open streets in Corvallis in June, and at least a dozen other items about the city, including links to other newsletters that might be of interest. All of this in just one newsletter. If you feel out of touch with the city, you can change that. Go to the city's website, CorvallisOregon.gov, and look on the right-hand side of the page for the tab labeled e-notifications. Click through that tab and sign up for some newsletters. Get informed. Thanks for listening to the Corvallis Civics Cafe. I hope I've helped you think about the formal meaning of the word civics and encouraged you to understand what civics means to you. An informed and engaged public creates a stronger democracy. I do think it's that simple. If you have comments or questions about the material I've shared, send me an email at wendy@korcfm.com. And if you have feedback for KORC's News, Music, and Civics, you can send us an email at news@korcfm.com. Thanks for tuning in to KORC's News, Music, and Civics show. The show airs on Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m. and repeats on Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. And the Civics Cafe can also be heard on Tuesday mornings at 10 a.m. following the many moods of Ben Vaughn.
The following article appeared as an As I See It editorial in the March 25, 2025 issue of the Corvallis Gazette Times, authored by Marge Popp and entitled, "This Limited Expansion is Another Ruse." Proponents of Coffin Butte Landfill Expansion claim Republic Services CUP application requests only a limited expansion. This characterization is misleading and obscures the true impact of the project. Republic Services aims to exploit a loophole in the 2020 franchise agreement to lift the 1.1 million ton annual cap on trash intake, paving the way for importing unlimited amounts of waste. This move would increase the profitability of their operations at the expense of our community and environment. The expansion involves significant expenditure, with tens of millions of dollars allocated to moving leachate ponds and millions of pounds of dirt on the south side of Coffin Butte Road. This investment is purportedly for only 6 additional years of landfill expansion. The current landfill footprint already has an estimated 14 to 16 years of capacity remaining at current trash intake levels, making the economic rationale behind this expansion questionable. Far from being limited, this project is a large-scale endeavor designed to maximize landfill capacity, potentially leading to the eventual closure of Coffin Butte Road and transforming the valley into a vast waste disposal site for other counties. An email exchange between Benton County Attorney Vance Crony and Republic Services employee Julie Jackson, dated October 14, 2020, and obtained via a public records request, reveals Republic Services' long-term ambitions for the site. Vance Crony writes, quote, Republic has a chunk of land south of Coffin Butte that is already zoned landfill, which only requires conditional use approval to begin use as a landfill cell. It also has many acres of EFU-zoned land that certainly can be used for additional cells, but would require rezoning. Are we both talking about the landfill-zoned acreage as creating an additional 15 to 20 years of life? Unquote. Julie Jackson replies, quote, Vance, this is just the estimate for the cell area we're asking to rezone. We have many acres that could hold waste, and that will likely be a future discussion with the county, unquote. Republic Services has a history of inaccurate reporting and noncompliance with the conditions of use for the Coffin Butte landfill, and Benton County has not taken appropriate action. The lack of consequences for noncompliance suggests a failure of our local government to protect our community and natural resources. A 2023 EPA investigation revealed significant methane leakage exceedances, further underscoring Republic Services' lack of transparency and accountability. Recent communications between the EPA and Republic Services indicate further issues with the accuracy of information provided by the company. The EPA's subpoena, requiring written verification, concludes with this sternly worded caution for the signatory. Quote, I am aware that there are significant penalties for submitting false information in response, including the possibility of fine and imprisonment, unquote. Interestingly, the landfill manager responsible for signing this document resigned around this time. It is imperative that we demand honesty and transparency for both our county government and Republic Services. This requires a capable and proactive staff that can think critically and independently, as well as engaged participation from the community. Our county government and commissioners have become overly reliant on Republic services to act responsibly, prioritizing the status quo over diligent oversight. Similarly, complacent residents have placed too much trust in elected officials and county staff to act in their best interests. With Benton County staff being well compensated, we should expect and demand experienced and dedicated individuals who are committed to serving the community's interests. It is time for us to recognize the true consequences of this expansion to our community and environment, and we must demand responsible governance and environmental stewardship. We need to wake up and smell the dump. That was an editorial, as I see it, in the March 25, 2025 issue of the Corvallis Gazette Times, authored by Marge Pop, and it was entitled, "This Limited Expansion is Another Ruse." You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
This is Wendy Byrne with a list of city meetings and special events for the week starting Sunday, April 6th. On Monday, April 7th, starting at 6 p.m., there will be a City Council business meeting. Everyone is welcome and encouraged to attend City Council meetings. This meeting will be held in person and virtually. See the published agenda for more details and participation instructions on the city website at corvallisoregon.gov. The meeting will take place in the council chambers, which are located on the second floor of the downtown fire station at 400 Northwest Harrison Boulevard in Corvallis. On Tuesday, April 8th, there will be a meeting of the Downtown Parking Task Force. The meeting starts at 10 a.m. Downtown Parking Task Force meetings can be attended in person or via Zoom. In person, the meetings take place in the second floor boardroom of the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library. The Corvallis-Benton County Public Library is located at 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue. Also on Tuesday, April 8th, the Historic Resources Commission will meet at 6:30 p.m. The Historic Resources Commission meetings are held in person and virtually. In-person meetings take place at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, which is located at 500 Southwest Madison Avenue in downtown Corvallis. The agenda and packet for the meeting can be found online at corvallisoregon.gov. On Wednesday, April 9th, the Corvallis-Benton County Economic Development Office invites you to a monthly outreach event titled Coffee with Your Economic Development Office. This event series encourages people to meet with the members of the Economic Development Office to discuss economic development and business support with the broader Corvallis community. Coffee with Your EDO is a monthly event held at a different cafe in Corvallis each month. This month's location is Greenhouse Coffee and Plants at 308 Southwest Monroe Avenue in Corvallis. The meeting starts at 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning, April 9th. Also on Wednesday, April 9th, the community is invited to join an event titled Building Solutions, Addressing Housing Needs in Our Community, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Corvallis-Benton County Public Library at 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue. There will be short presentations by representatives from affordable housing developers and by city staff. On Thursday, April 10th, starting at 3:30 p.m., the City Council will be holding an executive session. The Council meets an executive session to consider information or records that are exempt by law from public inspection. Executive sessions are closed to the public. This one will occur at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room at 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. Also on Thursday, April 10th, at 4 p.m., the City Council will have a work session. Everyone is welcome and encouraged to attend City Council work sessions. This work session will be held in person and virtually. See the published agenda for work session details and participation instructions at corvallisoregon.gov. The meeting will take place in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, located at 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. Thank you for listening to KORC's News, Music, and Civics here at 105.9 FM and streaming online at korcfm.com. This is Wendy Byrne.
Punk rock scene has always had an anti-authority bent to its message. The scene was largely anarchistic and rebellious in the 70s, and could have easily become just a counterculture anomaly. But by the 80s, the genre got more refined as bands like Bad Brains, Black Flag, and Bad Religion began to write songs that communicated very articulate points about systemic injustices within our society, rooted in historical colonialism. However, as pop punk and new wave ska emerged, they meshed into the 90s skate punk scene, which really brought punk rock into the mainstream culture, but watered down the ideological element of the music.
Ska sucks! Ska revival isn't cool, you stupid!
In crowds of skater bros who just wanted to slam dance to super fast, swear word laden music, Propagandhi stood out. After some successful promotion by Fat Records, their first album released in 1993 titled How to Clean Everything gained some traction in the skate punk scene. However, their second album, Less Talk, More Rock, had phrases like anti-fascist, gay positive, and pro-feminist on the cover. Phrases that are not at all uncommon to hear in the punk scene these days, but ones that caused Propagandhi album sales to plummet in the 90s. In 1996, I was 15, and not particularly politically minded, but a song titled, And We Thought Nation States Were a Bad Idea, really caught my attention. The opening lyrics, publicly subsidized, privately profitable, the anthem of the upper tier, puppeteers untouchable, were evocative and remain relevant today. But the lyrics that really caught my attention, after spelling out symptoms of the looming class war, during this decade, the band was known to bait crowds of frat boys, promising to play songs they would neither like nor recognize. The band was harassed and even attacked during performances as a result. Since then, their music has evolved from the abrasive, screaming skate punk sound to incorporate more melodic vocals with almost a thrash metal guitar sound. In May 2025, Propagandhi will release their eighth studio album. At Peace is the name of that album and their first single from it. I'd like to call your attention to the juxtaposition of emotive lyrics during the refrain. I am at peace these days, give or take a fit of blinding rage. Or, I am at peace, though presently convulsed with grief. These lyrics resonate with me, and with what I've heard a lot of people express lately. It is possible to hold many emotions at once, which can lead to feeling overwhelmed, no matter how emotionally mature you think you are. My hope is that songs like this can help folks cope with the uncertainty of what life brings. Remember that the fringe concepts that antagonize Propagandhi concert-goers in the 90s are now mainstream, and far less controversial than they were three decades ago. All because outspoken bands like this spoke to kids like me.
Hedge every bell, lick every boot, make every appeal. Prostrate yourself to the killing machine, spare yourself from its wheels. Better them than me, roll so seductively off your tongue. Your reckoning has begun. Stay between death and rebirth.
days, you and me reconvene. Oh yes, I'm really fine at parties. Try to cut my face with a sharpie. Excuse me, sir, this is an Arby's. I am at peace. I am at peace. Though presently convulsed with grief, I am at peace. Some days I'm scared I'm gonna die, or even worse, I might survive. I try to keep these words in mind. Nothing worth having comes without some kind of fight. Gotta kick in the darkness till it bleeds daylight.
That was Propagandhi with their new single, At Peace. They will be playing with The Descendants, The Interrupters, and more on June 25th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. Tickets on sale now.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. The following article was published in the Corvallis Advocate on April 4th, 2025. Headline reads, Fed Grants to Oregon Humanities Rescinded. Corvallis Project Put on Hold. Late on the evening of April 2nd, Oregon Humanities received a letter from the acting chair of the National Endowment for the Humanities, or NEH, stating that a grant intended to support the organization's work through 2027 has been rescinded. Nationally, every other state and jurisdictional humanities council received the same letter. Here in Corvallis, the Arts Center has been informed their $10,000 grant proposal for a new lecture series has been put on hold until, well, until nobody really knows when. This news comes on the heels of reports earlier in the week that the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, has recommended major cuts to the National Endowment for the Humanities, including reducing or entirely eliminating its staff. The reductions at NEH follow similarly severe cuts to the Institute for Museum and Library Services and other federal cultural agencies, and will quickly cascade down to the organizations these agencies support and work with. According to Adam Davis, Executive Director for Oregon Humanities, quote, "These cuts to Oregon Humanities will hit communities and individuals all over Oregon, and the same unnecessary impact will show up across the nation. We've been working in rural, frontier, and urban communities to create conditions for people to connect and think together even when they disagree. More connecting, listening, and thinking together is what Oregon and the country most need, now more than ever," unquote. Oregon Humanities is an independent nonprofit affiliated with NEH, one of 56 humanities councils tasked with distributing federal funds to local communities in every U.S. state and territory. For over 50 years, Oregon Humanities has helped connect Oregonians to share their ideas and experiences and learn from one another. In 2024, Oregon Humanities collaborated with 145 partner organizations around the state, distributed $827,152 in grants and fellowships to small organizations and individuals, and reached more than 50,000 people through its free magazine, podcasts, and other media. The organization was created in 1971 to distribute federal dollars in Oregon and has received funding from NEH without interruption ever since. NEH funds accounted for 44% of Oregon Humanities' budget in 2024, and a much larger share of many other councils, said a release from the Oregon Humanities. That was an article that was published on April 4th, 2025 from the Corvallis Advocate. And you're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
The following is a selection of headlines from last week on the program Democracy Now! More about the show, including recordings of full episodes, can be found at democracynow.org.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's killed at least 112 Palestinians over the past day, including dozens of children and elders, in three separate attacks on schools where hundreds of displaced families took shelter. In the deadliest of the day's massacres, 29 people were killed when four Israeli missiles struck the Dar al-Aqsa school in Gaza City. 18 children were among the dead, over 100 others wounded, with dozens believed to be trapped under the rubble. Separately, Israel bombed a water desalination plant east of Gaza City, its latest attack on civilian infrastructure. Meanwhile, Israel's ordered the forced expulsion of even more areas, this time from southern neighborhoods of Gaza City. Many of those affected have been displaced repeatedly over the last 18 months.
We haven't slept all of last night. It was a bloody night. We placed roofs over us, but they flew away. We put up walls, but they fell on us. Where should we go? Where should we go, people? How long will we remain like this? How long will we keep evacuating and coming back every other day, evacuating, then coming back? Until when?
The United Nations says some 280,000 Palestinians have been newly displaced since Israel unilaterally ended the Gaza ceasefire in March. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights warns Israel's total blockade of Gaza, now in its second month, has once again created famine conditions for some 2 million Palestinians relying on food aid. The U.S. Senate has voted down a pair of resolutions introduced by Senator Bernie Sanders to block $8.8 billion in new arms sales to Israel. On Thursday, no Republicans and just 14 Democrats voted alongside Senator Sanders to restrict the sale of massive bombs and other military equipment.
In the last 2 weeks, they have intensified their assault against the Palestinian people. According to UNICEF, since Netanyahu broke the ceasefire, more than 1,000 people have been killed, including over 300 children, and more than 600 children have been wounded.
Among Democrats voting against limiting arms sales to Israel was New Jersey Democrat Cory Booker. His vote came just 2 days after he delivered a 25-hour speech on the Senate floor promising to resist President Trump's agenda. Stock markets continue to plummet as President Trump's sweeping global tariffs drew widespread condemnation and plans for countermeasures. China, which is now subject to a 54% tariff, just announced a retaliatory 34% tariff on U.S. goods starting April 10th and accused the U.S. of bullying. French President Emmanuel Macron called for unity among European leaders and for the suspension of investments in the U.S.
I think what's important, and that's all the work that must be done by the sector, that future investments or investments announced in recent weeks should be suspended until things are clarified with the United States. Because what message will it send to have big European players investing billions of euros in the American economy at a time when we're being hit? So we must show collective solidarity.
France is also urging Europe to tax U.S. tech companies as part of a retaliatory strategy. Canada introduced a 25% tariff on U.S. cars and trucks. Here in the U.S., the automaker Stellantis said it's laying off 900 workers at five manufacturing plants after Trump's tariff plan was announced and temporarily pausing production at assembly plants in Mexico and in Canada. In Washington, D.C., a newly introduced Senate bill with bipartisan support would limit Trump's authority to impose tariffs without going through Congress. In a separate challenge to Trump's trade war, the new Civil Liberties Alliance sued to block tariffs on China, arguing Trump unlawfully invoked emergency powers to impose them. Several analysts have pointed out Trump's tariff plan appears to have been based on math calculated by AI chatbots. South Korea's highest court has unanimously voted to remove impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol 4 months after he tried and quickly failed to impose martial law.
By mobilizing the military and police to undermine the authority of constitutional institutions such as the National Assembly and violate the basic human rights of the people, he made a grave betrayal of the people's trust, who are the sovereign members of the Democratic Republic.
On the streets of Seoul, crowds broke out in cheers as the judgment was announced. Yoon's declaration of martial law on December 3rd triggered swift lawmaker action and massive public protest. South Korea's election commission will soon announce a date for a new election as Yoon's removal takes immediate effect. At least seven people were killed Thursday after a boat carrying refugees capsized off the Greek island of Lesbos. Three of those confirmed dead were children. 23 survivors have been rescued. Separately, authorities in Turkey say at least nine people died Thursday in a shipwreck off its northern coast. According to UN data, 125 people were killed or went missing last year as they undertook the perilous maritime journey between Turkey and nearby Greek islands in the Aegean Sea. In Washington, D.C., President Trump fired at least six National Security Council staffers after an Oval Office meeting Wednesday with the far-right activist Laura Loomer. The firings came over the objections of National Security Advisor Michael Waltz, who was present at the meeting, and after Loomer reportedly handed Trump a list of people she considered disloyal. Among those ousted was General Timothy Hawk, who led both the National Security Agency and the U.S. Cyber Command. Loomer is a far-right conspiracy theorist, a self-described proud Islamophobe, and a longtime Trump supporter who was previously banned from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for hateful social media posts. The acting inspector general of the Pentagon is launching an investigation into Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's use of a signal group chat to discuss U.S. war plans in Yemen, which accidentally included the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine. The Trump administration warned school and state officials across the country Thursday that federal education funding will be withdrawn unless public schools eliminate all DEI, that's diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The Education Department gave states 10 days to sign and return letters certifying compliance with the order. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, said in a statement, quote, "In the middle of a school year, the president is trying to bully the very same school districts that he insisted just a few weeks ago, should be in charge of education. He's wielding a cudgel of billions in federal aid to tens of millions of children to force educators to kowtow to his politics and ideology," Weingarten said. Members of Elon Musk's Doge operation have gained access to a sensitive data system that contains the personal information of unaccompanied immigrant children, including their mental health records and reports of abuse. The data portal is run by the Department of Health and Human Services, which takes custody of unaccompanied children. Many agencies contracted by HHS to provide housing and other care have been accused of neglect and abuse, including sexual assault. The data breach comes after Doge made massive cuts to a watchdog agency within HHS that oversees the facilities where immigrant children are held. Doge staffers were also granted access to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services data systems. Illinois Congressmember Delia Ramirez, who is the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants, said in a statement, quote, "They've ordered the abduction of immigrant activists, the erratic cancellation of visas, the use of infamous offshore mega prisons, and the violation of due process. It's deplorable that the sensitive information of temporary protected status, DACA applicants and recipients, visa holders and naturalized individuals would be used to violate their rights," unquote. In Washington state, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents raided a roofing company in Bellingham County early Wednesday, arresting at least 37 immigrant workers. Witnesses say the agents showed up in unmarked vehicles. Workers were rounded up and processed in a warehouse on site before being loaded onto buses. The group's now being held at the troubled Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, where farm worker labor organizer Alfredo Lelo Juarez has also been jailed since last week. We'll have more on Lelo later in the broadcast. The Senate's confirmed Dr. Mehmet Oz to head the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The former TV host and doctor has long supported the privatization of Medicare and Medicaid. The confirmation comes one day after Senate Republicans unveiled a budget blueprint, which includes $4.5 trillion in tax breaks for the wealthy that Republicans would pay for by slashing Medicaid. A federal judge on Thursday temporarily blocked the Department of Health and Human Services from terminating $11 billion in federal health funding that was allocated to states during the COVID-19 pandemic. Judge Mary McElroy sided with the 23 Democratic states in the District of Columbia, which argued the withdrawal of funding would create chaos and threaten the delivery of life-saving care. And parts of the central United States are bracing for potentially historic flooding after roughly 100 tornadoes hit the region Wednesday. At least 7 people were killed in Tennessee, Missouri, and Indiana as homes and in some cases entire neighborhoods were flattened. Severe weather alerts were also issued in the state of Arkansas, Illinois, Mississippi, and Kentucky, where Governor Andy Beshear warned residents Wednesday of more life-threatening conditions.
When we have this much rain, it's the decisions about when to get out, about what to drive through, when to go stay with someone else that can be the difference between life and death.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And that was a selection of headlines from Democracy Now!. More information about the program, including full episodes, can be found at democracynow.com. You're listening to KORC.
This is KORC, the No Food Left Behind program of the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition, is offering a free, family-friendly event called Bread to Tap. This will feature live music, prize drawings, games, and a unique beer offering, taking place Saturday, April 12th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Old World Deli, located at 2nd and Adams in downtown Corvallis. The address is 341 Southwest 2nd Street. Co-sponsored by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, Bread to Tap celebrates Food Waste Prevention Week. That's an annual nationwide campaign to promote reducing food waste, supporting a healthier environment, saving money for families, and addressing food insecurity in our communities. You may ask, why is this called Bread to Tap? Oregon Trail Brewery created a special limited-release beer called Recyc Ale. It's an English-style brown ale that is brewed with upcycled sourdough bread from Old World Deli and surplus grains from the brewery. The deli's chef, JD, is going to be on hand featuring his special low-waste menu demonstrating how edible kitchen scraps can be repurposed into other food items. The afternoon's activities will include live original music by local singer-songwriter Magic Mama Sheerston Haleen and friends, food waste trivia with prizes, food waste prevention bingo, and more. According to a recent report by ReFed, individual consumers are responsible for the majority of food loss and waste within the United States, not retailers or food service like most people think. 2023 U.S. reports show that consumers spent $261 billion on food they purchased and didn't ultimately eat. Also at the event, Oregon DEQ staff will be on hand to celebrate food waste prevention efforts in our community, and both American Sign Language and Spanish language interpreters will be available. Bread to Tap was awarded one of only 3 statewide DEQ event sponsorships. April 7th through 13th, 2025 in Corvallis is Food Waste Prevention Week. There's more information about No Food Left Behind at nofoodleftbehindcorvallis.org and more information about the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition at sustainablecorvallis.org. This is KORC.
listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. On Saturday, April 5th, a national day of protest occurred called the 50-51 Movement, which stands for 50 protests, 50 states, one day. Demonstrations organized under the banner of Hands Off, targeting perceived threats to democracy, bodily autonomy, and climate justice. Third Act, a group co-founded by environmentalist Bill McKibben and focused on older Americans engaging in activism, is partnering with other advocacy groups such as Indivisible and Move On to lead the protests. Nationwide, more than 500,000 people RSVP'd to attend rallies on Saturday. More than 20,000 people attended a rally in Washington, D.C. In New York City, the streets were filled with protesters who encompassed 20 city blocks. Cities such as Missoula, Montana, Chicago, Illinois, and many other cities and towns across the country saw record-breaking attendance. Here in Corvallis, approximately 400 people attended the hands-off rally at the courthouse and waved homemade signs, shouted rallying calls, listened to music, and heard speeches by many prominent leaders of the city. Many booths were set up as the rally continued for more than 2 hours. The following is a short excerpt of the rally here in Corvallis. As you can hear from that quickly edited audio piece, there was so much activity. Speakers, music, cars honking, rallying chants, that it was difficult to hone in on one particular item at one time. According to the Corvallis Gazette Times, thousands of people attended this rally. I estimated about 400, but I think I underestimated the attendance level of this rally, and I've never been to a larger protest in my life. You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics. I'm Dan Kroll. On April 1st, the world lost musician Michael Hurley, who had over 30 albums in his discography. Some knew him as the grandfather of freak folk. Some may use the term outsider folk. He was 83 years old. His family did not give an exact cause of death, but they did say the godfather of freak folk was, for a prolific half century, the purveyor of an eccentric genius and compassionate wit. There is no other. Friends, family, and the music community deeply mourn his loss. Unquote. According to The Guardian, which you can find online at theguardian.com, Hurley was born in Bucks County, Pennsylvania in 1941. He was the son of an operetta director, and he traveled the country with him as a child. This itinerant nature continued into young adulthood, when he started out as a musician. Hitchhiking one day, he was picked up by folklorist Fred Ramsey, who ended up producing his debut album, First Songs, which was released on the U.S. label Folkways back in 1964. The label is now known as Smithsonian Folkways, and they have paid tribute, writing, "His wit and wild imagination, steadfast through the decades, are a beacon for singers and songwriters seeking to express the joys and fantastical idiosyncrasies of the world." Michael Hurley spent time in New York's flourishing folk revival scene, which was home to the likes of Bob Dylan. But by his own admission, he didn't have the drive to climb the music career ladder. He said, "I didn't enjoy the process of applying for gigs, that determination to penetrate things, all this trouble you had to go through. Instead, Hurley said that he preferred playing parties, little gatherings, drinking with friends, hopping across the river. It may be no surprise that he ended up in Oregon. He lived in Astoria and was known for playing local gigs in the last several years in Astoria, in Portland, nearby towns like Scappoose. There is even a restaurant in Portland located near Mississippi Studios called Sweedee, S-W-E-E-D-E-E. And that's named after a song of Michael Hurley, which we'll listen to now. This is Sweedee from his 1971 release, Armchair Boogie. It's Michael Hurley, known to some as the godfather of freak folk. He died on April 1st at his home in Astoria at the age of 83.
My little woman causes me a lot of trouble sometimes. She worries me so bad, I don't know what to do. I take a walk, figure the rolling of my feet would come to ease my mind. I'll just go away, and I won't know where I'm going. And I won't know where that I'm going to. 'Cause she bugger me, she bugger me, oh man, she'd bugger you. I'm with you in the morning, baby, till the break of day. I know you won't take my heart, you're trying to make me go away. Seem like everybody got a little hard luck sometimes. I know one thing for sure, baby, I've been having my baby, I've been having mine. We had one of them old flea bag apartments. You know the kind I mean. You walk up on the fifth floor there. Sometimes on a sunny day from the roof, you'd see them flying kites in Washington Square. I go up on the roof and I watch her hanging up the clothes, and I'd say to her, wash the clothes, sweetie dee, and hang them on the line. And I can see by the way you wash the clothes, your cooking must be fine. I'm with you in the morning, baby, till the break of day. I know you don't want my heart, try to make me go away. Seem like everybody got a little hard luck sometime. And I know one thing for sure, I've been having my baby, I've been having mine.
I remember that old scumbag coffee shop where we used to hang out at. The manager there, he'd let us stay without paying a cover. I was always asking her sometime, we gotta leave the city. I'd say to her, you wash them clothes, sweetie dee, and hang them on the line. I can see by the way you wash the clothes, your cooking must be fine. I'm with you in the morning, baby, till the break of day. I know you won't take my heart, don't make me go away. Seem like everybody got a little hard luck. Sometime, and I know one thing for sure, baby, I've been having my baby, I've been having my. You wash them clothes, sweetie D, and hang them all the line. I can see by the way you wash the clothes, your cooking must be fine.
That was Michael Hurley with a track of his called Sweetie, perhaps one of his more known tracks. Michael Hurley passed away at the age of 83 at his home in Astoria on April 1st. He was known as an American folk singer-songwriter who was part of the Greenwich Village folk music scene of the 1960s and 70s. And in addition to being a musician, he was a cartoonist and a painter. His music has been described as outsider folk. Some have called him the grandfather of freak folk. We remember Michael Hurley as we conclude today's edition of KORC News, Music, and Civics. Let's listen to an instrumental track of his. This one is called Red Ravager's Reel. And like the song we just heard, this also comes from the album Armchair Boogie, though again, Michael Hurley does have over 30 releases out there, and in the coming weeks, we at KORC will give some of those tracks and albums a spin. Thanks for joining us today for KORC News, Music, and Civics. Here's Red Ravager's Reel by Michael Hurley.